You are listening to All Access Pass, created by the Accessibility Collective on 101.9 CITR FM.
CITR's collectively run show that covers issues of inclusion, equity, and accessibility for people with diverse cognitive and physical abilities.
On campus and beyond.
We are broadcasting live from our studio in the AMS Student Nest on the traditional, ancestral, occupied, and unceded territory of the Musqueam people.
Hey guys, hope you're having a great Wednesday. My name is Sarah, and we're here at CITR with All Access Pass, our show about equity, inclusion, and accessibility for people with diverse cognitive and physical abilities. In the studio today, we've got Kaylin, Addison, Desi, Patricio, and Sophie, as well as our contributions by our satellite members, Estefania, and our member, Deepy. We've got a big show today about a topic people can't stop talking about, and that's the Bell Let's Talk campaign for mental health awareness. You might have seen posters at the bus stop, you might have seen it on social media. Addison and Kaylin will tell us a bit about the campaign and some proper terminology you can use surrounding mental health. And Patricio will tell us a bit about the Bell corporate strategy. Following that, we will have interviews with Sean McCain, the lead singer of Canadian band Great Big Sea, who is a huge advocate for mental health and a Bell Let's Talk ambassador, and Megan Davis, who is a professor of social sciences at York University. Finally, we'll be talking to the founders of MPA, an organization supporting the recovery of people with mental health. It'll be a jam-packed hour here with All Access Pass, so let's get started. We have Addison and Kaylin to talk about mental health awareness and Bell Let's Talk campaign.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Sarah. So we're going to start off by just talking about what is mental health. So mental health is maintaining a balance in all aspects of one's life, which includes social, physical, spiritual, economic, and mental balance. Bell Let's Talk Day is today, which is a great time to talk about mental health and work to debunk the stigma surrounding it. The Bell Let's Talk campaign has been an integral part of raising awareness and funds to help people with mental health experiences find access to resources. The Bell Let's Talk campaign has raised $86.5 million and has reached almost 500,000 children and youth. This money that is donated gets put back into the community directly, allowing for greater support services in all areas of Canada. Bell Let's Talk implements 5 ways in which we can work together to end the stigma and start a conversation. This includes educating oneself, being kind, listening, and asking, talking about it, and as Addison will cover later, focusing on how language matters. It is important to educate oneself because having the right tools and knowing the right words to say can help to better understand what certain people are experiencing with their mental illness, and having the ability to discuss it can make a difference. Kindness is key. Being kind can make a world of difference in and of itself. Whether it is something as simple as a smile or being a good listener, it can help to open up the conversation surrounding mental health. Mental illness is a lot more common than a lot of people realize, and being a good listener and asking how you can help can sometimes be the first step to recovery for these individuals. Saying things like, "I'm sorry you aren't feeling well," or "How can I help?" are great ways to generate a conversation and help people who are down to feel better. 2 of every 3 people with mental illness suffer in silence due to fear of judgment and rejection. Having these tools to be able to open a conversation is the first steps to help eliminate the stigma around mental health. With that being said, I will now mention some statistics on mental illness pertaining to Canadians. It is important to note that mental illness will directly affect all Canadians at some point throughout their lives. 20% of Canadians will personally experience mental illness in their lifetime. 70% of mental health problems have their onset during childhood or adolescence. Young people aged 15 to 24 are more likely to experience mental illness. So, breaking the stigma. The provincial government has implemented a 3 pillars of mental health and substance use strategy, started in 2017, and its goal is to complete these goals by 2020. These are 3 steps are wellness, access, and partnerships. Wellness focuses on prevention and intervening early. Its goal is to better equip individuals, families, communities, and workplaces in BC to support mental wellness. This will encourage support to be given earlier. Access supports the navigation and expanse of service reach, allowing individuals and families to easily find the right information and services that they need. Partnerships allow for coordination of services beyond boundaries, working together to deliver more integrated supports and services that are focused on the person's community and cultural history.
And now we're going to turn towards a note on language. As Kayla had mentioned before, the impact of language in relation to Bell Let's Talk, the words we use to discuss mental health can work to create more access to resources and support, or it can function to discriminate, stigmatize, and or disempower someone. Additionally, common and harmful language around mental health can isolate individuals in our society. Language and words attempt to act as symbols to describe experiences of life. Sometimes they fail. However, we can put our focus on using different language that does not harm the experiences and identities of people living and experiencing mental health. The organization Mental Health America places essential importance on person-first language. Their focus is on a person-first recovery-oriented approach rather than illness-centered approach, as they explain, quote, "The use of language is critical to ensuring a recovery-oriented and person-centered approach. It is important that people are seen first as people and not seen as their illness. People are not schizophrenic, bipolar, or borderline. People are not cases or illnesses to be managed. Outside of just being insensitive, the following is an example of the harm in taking an illness-centered approach. When people are seen only as schizophrenic, it often becomes too easy to focus on just reducing symptoms of psychosis. The problem is that there is so much more to getting better than just getting rid of the bad voices or other symptoms. Recovery involves increasing a person's ability to make the changes they want in their life, the power to get better, to identify their goals, to develop the ability to accomplish their goals, and provide the supports needed to attain their goals. It means focusing on the person's strengths and the choices they want for their lives, not just their symptoms," end quote. And that was from Mental Health America. Making small changes with the words we use can make huge impacts on the way we understand mental health, the way we treat people with mental health experiences, and the way we build a more accessible and less harmful society. You could even start right now by picking one word you use often in your vocabulary and swapping it out. An important thing to note is that we may unknowingly use harmful language, as in we may not purposefully utter a harmful slur directed towards someone. The point is that we can so easily use the language that was historically and is still presently used to discriminate or stigmatize mental health. For example, some harmful language that's typically used could be psycho, crazy, lunatic, schizo, or bipolar. So Mental Health America suggests a few alternatives for that. So instead of saying those harmful words, you could say people living with mental health conditions, a person with schizophrenia or bipolar disorder. And then here are some examples of unintentionally harmful adjectives that we use in everyday speech when talking to friends or colleagues or family. You could fill in this sentence with any of the following words. So you could say, "Wow, I went to this concert last night and it was blank." You might say insane, crazy, mental. But now think about the impact, whether unintentional or not, and find another word. Maybe you use amazing, ridiculous, spectacular, rad, or unbelievable. The good news is that there are so many possible adjectives to replace a cluster of harmful words. So for more resources on this topic about language, check out, there's an article from Vice called "Why the Words We Use to Talk About Mental Health Are Important." You can check out the really neat website, The Body Is Not an Apology, for a section on mental health. And then also stay tuned for more conversation on Bell Let's Talk. And on their website, Bell Let's Talk, they have a conversation guide to help facilitate conversations about mental health.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot for that, Addison and Kaylin. I learned a lot. This is Newfoundland and Labrador band Great Big Sea with the song "When I'm Up." Stick around to hear more about mental health from All Access Pass.
Wait and see, wait and see, oh, wait and see. There's excitation, there's sweet disintegration, a few discolorations, then it comes along. Obvious what he chooses, the kisses and the bruises, there ain't nothing he refuses. Then it comes along, it comes along. When I am lifted, I am lifted, I am lifted. When I'm up, I can't get down, can't get down, can't get level. When I'm up, I can't get down, get my feet back on the ground. When I'm up, I can't get down, can't get down, can't get level.
feet back on the ground. He just needs something to find him, something to wind him up. It won't take long to find him when it comes on strong. The sky's spinning, streetlights are spinning, night's just beginning, and then it comes on strong. It comes on strong, and I am lifted. I am lifted. I am lifted. When I'm up, I can't get down. Can't get down, can't get level. When I'm up, I can't get down. Get my feet back on the ground. When I'm up, I can't get down. Can't get down, can't get level. When I'm up, I can't get down. Get my feet back on the ground.
Welcome back to All Access Pass, a show about current topics and issues surrounding various physical and cognitive disability. You just heard the song When I'm Up by Great Big Sea. Today we've been talking about mental health, including Bell Let's Talk campaign. Patricio is here to tell us about their corporate strategies.
Hello everyone. That's right. Bell is a company that is constantly promoting and is committed to building connections that strengthen relationships and transform communities. Their primary corporate goal is to be recognized by customers as Canada's leading communication company. What are they doing to achieve this? Well, they have been delivering new innovative products and services that are accessible to everyone so those products can connect people. And aside from being a leader in terms of market share, they already have a 47% of market share in the telecommunication industry. For them, being a leader means nurturing economic growth and setting standards for doing business transparently, honestly, and ethically. Personally, I believe Bell is setting the example by creating a social and inclusive vision that will create new benchmarks in the telecommunication industry. And you know what type of business leadership is this one? This is the kind of corporate leadership that believes businesses should exist to add a positive societal benefit as an equal priority to delivering profits to shareholders. Currently, Bell is working to help remove the stigma around mental illness. You know how they are doing this? By encouraging people to talk about it and share these stories with the public. This initiative seeks to promote awareness and action with a strategy constructed on four pillars. Number one, fighting the stigma. Number two, improving access to care. Number three, supporting world-class research. And number four, examples in workplace mental health. Based on the numbers of Bell's annual report, you know, the company's yearly report to shareholders documenting its activities and finances in the previous financial year, we can see their commitment to mental health now stands at more than $86 million, and the report says Bell will donate at least $100 million by 2020. Part of their social corporate strategy also includes meeting the needs of all customers. Bell has taken steps over the past several years to make it easier for Canadians with physical speech, cognitive, hearing and vision-related challenges to access their advanced communications products and services. In 2016, The company upgraded their accessibility services center on Bell.ca with improved navigation when using screen readers and keyboards. The site meets internationally recognized web content accessibility guidelines and also features a new mobile device selector, making it easier to find devices with specific accessibility features such as hearing aid, compatibility, and screen magnifications. There is also the mobile accessibility app, a screen app to assist low vision and blind users that is complementary for all Bell Mobility customers with an Android device. To support Canadians who are deaf or hard of hearing, Bell introduced a dedicated wireless rate plan that eliminates unnecessary voice minutes. Bell has invested approximately $25 million in accessibility initiatives such as text with 911 service, enabling this way customers with speech or hearing impairment to communicate with emergency services. And video relate service, VRS, which facilitates real-time sign language interpretation of telephone conversations. Finally, Bell has been recognized as Canada's top communication company in corporate responsibility and environmental performance in Newsweek 2016 international ranking of the world's top social responsible companies. All of this work and initiatives demonstrate Bell's commitment to well-being of society and to best service and experience for their stakeholders.
Thanks for that, Patrizio. We're going to go on a break, but stick around because next we have an interview with Sean McCain from Great Big Sea. From Charlottetown PEI, this is the band Paper Lions with Pull Me In.
I am a prairie girl, straight to the Hi, welcome back. So we are here with Sean McCann right now. Sean McCann is a Canadian singer-songwriter and a former member of the Canadian folk rock band, The Great Big Sea. After struggling with alcoholism, McCann got sober in 2011 and subsequently left the band in 2012. Now he has a solo career where he writes songs largely about this period in his life. McCann is now also a Bell Let's Talk ambassador, and he also organized a benefit this past November to raise money to purchase guitars for veterans living with PTSD and other mental health disorders. So welcome, Sean.
Hey, how are you, Sophie?
Good. How are you doing?
I am great. A little bit of a cold, but that's fine. I'm glad to be back in Vancouver.
Good to hear. So I just wanted to start off with how and why you decided to get involved in Bell's Let's Talk campaign.
Yeah, you know what? I met this remarkable woman. Her name is Clara Hughes. I met her 4 years ago at an event, and she told me about Bell Let's Talk, and I guess she told them to reach out to me and said I'd be a good fit for the positive message that we're trying to share about stigma and mental health. So I got tangled in with her. I find her to be a very inspirational person and a very sincere person. You know, she not only talks the talk, she walks the walk. And sometimes when she walks, she wins gold medals and stuff. So she's pretty cool.
Great. And you were actually just mentioning the stigma involved with mental health. So actually, could you expand a bit more on that and why with a campaign like this, it's important to bring awareness?
Yeah, I mean, my own issues were the result of stigma, largely, I think. You know, when I was sexually abused by a Catholic priest when I was just 15, and I really, there was no one for me to go to, you know, back then. It was not an option to talk about it. And that was a result of a culture that had been seriously indoctrinated for hundreds of years. But as societies evolve, I mean, we learn from our mistakes. And then today, over the past decade, we've seen people talking about mental health illnesses. And in my case, people drink for a reason. And the trauma I experienced led me to an addiction to alcohol. But in today's world, it's okay. I've seen this real growth in society that we can talk about this as any other illness, any other pain, and we can, like anything else, you can, by talking about it, you can treat and help and otherwise. But from my own personal experience, it's great because I know that a secret can kill you because one almost killed me.
Mm-hmm. And also, I wanted to ask, you were just saying how much it improved over the past even 10 years. Where do you think society still needs to go in reducing the stigma?
We need to go to the point where it's gone. There's nothing positive. There's no good that comes from not talking about something. And so it has to go. And that's not, you know, it's easier said than done, I know, but it means not judging people. You know, it means listening to everyone and respecting everyone, and that's something we struggle with. But you know, we see massive changes. You know, not only certainly in technology, but even in this year alone, the Me Too movement. We see this huge explosion, a powerful openness, and that's great. That's super progressive, and it's a lot of it is propelled on social media. And at the same time, you see a Trump in the White House, thanks to Twitter. So it's a remarkable time to be alive. You know, we have great power in our hands and in these little screens. And I think it's opening doors, but they have the power to close them too. So it's up to us. But I believe that we will make better choices as we keep growing.
Great. Well, I also wanted to just expand on what you're saying about openness and how important it is to be open. You've actually been really open within your own songs, especially more recently. And so I kind of wanted to ask about what it was like to revisit those memories and writing songs about that time in your life.
It's painful in some ways, but the music and these songs are the means through which I was able to tell, face my truth. I mean, I used alcohol to hide from the truth. And but the songs are how the truth came out, and they gave me a way to say something that was too hard to say. They are my therapy. Music for me is my religion now, and it is my medicine too. You know, every show I do, every speaking engagement, that's my meeting. I don't really go to AA or like groups and stuff, but I make sure that I'm out in the open and fully present, and I make it a point to live in that space again. And every time I do and tell that secret, it hurts. But every time I tell it, it loses power over me, you know. And I don't, because of that, I really feel like I'm no longer a victim. I feel like I'm a survivor now.
And what kind of feedback have you been getting from sharing your story, both through your music and speaking engagements?
The most common, I get a lot of feedback. Every time I talk or play a show, there's a people disclose to me a lot. Today, people disclose to me. And a lot of the feedback I got when I released the first record, Help Yourself, I put out You Know I Love You since then, and I just put out There's a Place. But a lot of people came back and they say, I know that song. That song's my mother. I know that song. That's my husband. I know that song. That's my brother. I know that song. That song is me. And even though the songs are deeply personal, I've learned that they resonate, you know, with people. And by that was a huge lesson and a huge leap forward for me, because it made me realize that I really wasn't alone, you know, and that I did have people to talk to, and there was people that wanted to talk to me. And that's the reason I'm still sober today.
Well, that's great to hear. So we have only time for one more question. But just sure. To finish up, I wanted to ask what advice you would give to people who are themselves dealing with mental illness and people who are supporting people dealing with mental illness.
Don't give up. It's a difficult thing to confront your truth, but it has to be done. But don't give up and realize that we all deserve help. We all deserve love. And we're all worthy of that. And, you know, so don't give up until you find the way that works for you. And whatever that is, do it. Do whatever it takes to survive, because life is worth living.
Great. Well, thank you again so much for being on the show today.
Thank you. You guys are great. I'm actually going to be back here on March the 2nd. I'm going to be at the Evergreen Cultural Center in Coquitlam.
Oh.
And I'd love for you all to come out and see and sing songs with me. It'd be awesome.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
Brilliant. Have a great day.
You too.
Cheers.
Hey, wait. Hi. Hi, Sean.
Hi.
My name's Sarah, and I'm from the Maritimes. Hi.
Where are you from?
And I just wanted to say that I think listening to your music... Oh, I'm from PEI.
And you're in PEI.
I'm from Stratford, right outside Charlottetown, like just across the bridge.
I know where it is, yeah.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to say that it's really powerful because, like, hearing from you, because, we hear your music all the time, and it's such a part of our culture, and to hear you say such, like, vulnerable and sincere words, like, it's just really interesting to put a face to someone that's, I don't know, such a part of our lives. So that's cool. Thank you.
That's very kind. You're cool because you're from PEI. Everyone's cool there. I'm going to be there in the summer. I go back every summer. I'm going to be there in August. I think there's a little place called the Trailside Inn, which is in Mount Stewart, PEI. And they dinner and a show. It's in August. I think I'm going to be there a couple of days. I always spend a week there just so I can
go
swim in
the
water.
Well, that's the best weather, too. Yeah.
Oh, it's just beautiful. I love it there. I always loved it. You've come from a beautiful place. And thanks for your kind and beautiful words.
Thanks.
They're very encouraging.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Okay. Later, girls. Take care.
Bye. You too.
Cheers.
Thanks so much to Sean McCain for being on the show today, as well as Sophie for interviewing. One of our interviewers, Deepi, couldn't be in today, but contributed to the interview questions and information. Up next, we've got the song We Were Young by Adrienne Lenker. And just past that, our collective member Estefania interviewed Megan Davis from York University and the founders of MPA. It's going to be great, so stick around.
And your mind was beating like a djembe drum. We were young, we were young. You were mine and we were young. And our love was burning, life was but a dream. I got lost a few times, you knew everywhere I'd hide. You would look and call, and eventually I'd come. We were young, we were young. We got lost when we were young, but our hearts were always easy to unwind. Off to heal the aching pieces of the earth. And it hurt when you left, but I never told you how. 'Cause I wanted you to go and travel on. Travel on, travel on. We were young and you were gone. Off to heal the aching pieces of the earth.
More about fashion, we asked CITR student executive and fashion expert Jonathan Q what fashion means to him.
Like, it's just aesthetically something that's so ostentatious, typically. I mean, because of course, I mean, it's also, you know, I mean, when you say fashion, I think people are talking explicitly about consumerism as opposed to someone who buys like, you know, let's say, you know, someone buys it.
If you really want to know more about fashion, come on down to CITR in the Student Union Building of UBC and pick up some of our merchandise à la mode. Nous avons t-shirts, sweatshirts, socks, and coffee mugs.
But it's also very aesthetically gripping.
To keep you styling in support of the station you love. Isn't that right, Jonathan?
Well, actually, is it? Because, I mean, you know, I was going to say because of the cultural vacuum that we exist within, but then, you know, really, fashion today is kind of derived from the European idea of couture, and that's been around for centuries.
Do you have any awareness of what's been happening with newspapers in the last 10 years?
Not at all. I mean, truth is, I don't even get them anymore. I just read the news on my phone. It's so much better, and it's free.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The future of news media is in your hands. If you're interested in independent journalism and current affairs, CITR's News Collective is for you. Help hound down stories about diverse and underrepresented issues in the Lower Mainland for Democracy Watch, airing every Thursday at 5 p.m. Email volunteer at citr.ca to get involved.
Hi guys, that was the song We Were Young by Adrian Lenker. And welcome back to All Access Pass at CITR. We're really excited today to be talking about mental health. Up next, we've got an interview done by Estefania, our satellite member. She is interviewing Megan Davis and the founders of MPA. Davis is an associate professor at York University in the Department of Social Science. She's the lead academic researcher for the Mad City Gallery Project. Patty Gazzola and Arthur Giovanoza are founders of the Motivation, Power, and Achievement Society, better known as MPA Society.
I teach at York University, and I teach in an interdisciplinary program called Health and Society.
Okay.
So that's an undergraduate degree program that we come at things more from the arts and humanities perspective. I was an early member of the History of Madness group and helped to create the original website. And along with my colleague, Erica Dick, who's at the University of Saskatchewan, we spearheaded the After the Asylum project and got national funding for that around 2007. And I was the person who was one of the lead editors and the curator for the After the Asylum site. So pulling together, I think there's 16 different projects on that site. There's framed photographs that were discovered in one of our community people's bedroom closet, and she had had them there since 1975. And they were taken by a photographer who was also a member of the MPA. And I was just blown away by them because as a historian, you don't very often find something like that. There are about 35 of them in total. They're studio quality. They're the original prints. And they're so powerful because they are the faces of people that use the drop-in. And some of them are people who've just been forgotten entirely. Patty Gozola, the person who had them, remembered their names during the research that we did. The beginning piece of all of this story is actually the history of madness in Canada. So this project started around in the early 2000s, which time websites were still fairly innovative. And a group of academics created this online site that was meant to be display space and an educational hub and a kind of online archive. So the original website developed. But around 2007, we decided that we really needed a big project to make an impact on the national stage. So we took on a very big topic in the history of madness in Canada, which is the history of deinstitutionalization of mental health.
Yes.
Is the process by which mental health shifted from being primarily located in these large asylums, these large residential institutions where people would go and stay for a very long, often for a long time, to community mental health, where the idea was so that instead of taking people with mental health difficulties away from society, they would stay in society, but be cared for in the context of their communities. And so what many people would say is this was a flawed experiment, and nobody wants to go back to what we used to have.
So my name is Arthur Giovinazzo, and in 1971, late in 71, my friend Patty, Patty Gazzola from Lethbridge, we're from the same hometown, Lethbridge, Alberta, said, oh, there's this house, it's up at 10th and Trotch, and they're having a meeting, it's called Mental Patients Association, and, you know, you want to go to a meeting with me.
So from that first meeting, what was it that kept you going back to MPA?
Like a few other things at the time, you felt there was a kind of a sense of community. And in the same sense that you did when I moved out here, I started living in a, what was called a hippie commune. And there was some shared values in the sense of, you know, anti-Vietnam War activity, interest in the early feminist movement, pretty well every universal commitment to racial equality and ending certain kinds of injustices. So, like with MPA, you just felt at home. So that's what it felt like a community. And it was a very easy place. Somebody once said, you know, there was no, oh, you had to become a member, you had to sign up or whatever. If you came through the door twice, you were a member. And you felt that acceptance. And then it became, well, do you have anything to contribute? What this show is about, though, is about the early years of MPA, the start, the what Lanny created and what Lanny and his friends and the first members of MPA were able to achieve in that 1971 to 1980, roughly, time frame, which was a lot. So the late 60s, even the mid to late 60s and early 70s, there was a lot going on. And as far as psychiatric issues go,
yes,
that was a time when One of the other things I was really involved with was the Gay Liberation Front, because a friend of mine and I started the Vancouver Gay Liberation Front in October 1970. And that was when homosexuality was still listed in the book.
Oh, the DSM. As, yeah.
Yes, as a mental illness.
Okay.
That wasn't voted on. Funny how they can vote as to what's a disease and what's not. What was also going on, though, there was a total evaluation of all kinds of psychiatric practices. Issues about electroshock therapy.
Yes.
Is it good? Is it effective? Some form of torture? There was ferment, if you know what I mean, like whether it was the women's movement, the gay movement, racial equality. People were questioning authority in new ways, questioning the way it was. And MPA just happened to arrive at the right time and had a very smart founder, Lanny, who never wanted to be called leader, did not want hierarchies. Brilliant guy, because the way it worked at MPA, God bless Lanny, there's no hierarchy here. Everybody who comes in is involved, ex-patient or non-ex-patient. You're a member. You get to vote. So to work at MPA, there was 6-month terms, but you had to be elected. So if you wanted to work at a house, West 11th house in my case, you had to stand up in front of the 10 or 11 people living in the house who were all ex-patients and say, I'd like to work here. And they got to vote on whether you can work at the house. And if you wanted to work at the drop-in center, same thing. You had to stand up. And some of the meetings, when it was election time every 6 months, you would have 70, 80, 90 people at the meeting, sometimes a couple times over 100. And you had to, again, it was a, well, humbling is not the right word, but it was, I guess humble is a good word. It kept you on the same level. Within very short time of MPA being founded, we set up a newspaper called In a Nutshell. You may remember the New York Times as, at the time, the New York Times motto was, all the news that's fit to print. And the Nutshell's motto is, all the fits that's news to print. We examined electroshock therapy, we examined drugs, and we examined issues around that were of interest to women, like why women were being thrown in mental hospitals in the 50s because they weren't conforming to the happy housewife in the suburbs model, or why were so many people wound up in mental hospitals because they were gay. So all of this was being questioned, and we had, like, if you look at the early Nutshells, some really well done writing. And we also were able to print poems that people had written. And well, Patty, for instance, who never worked on a newspaper, she became an accomplished newspaper person, you know, laying it out, typing it up, getting it all ready. And it went through a few changes. At first, it was just one of those mimeograph, Gestetner.
I was talking to Lanny the other day, we were laughing about putting out the original newsletters on a sheet of paper on the old Gestetner machine. And like, a lot of people don't even know what it is, but... Well, you type on a piece of a paper that's, it's kind of like a carbon, but it's not, and it, the ball that you use actually cuts the letters into the paper.
Okay.
And then you put it on this big machine, there's holes where it fits on, you ink it.
Okay.
And then you turn it. Every time you turn it, it cranks out a sheet of paper with the printing on it. Because there was no Xeroxes. When I first started with MPA, I was Patty's servant. Oh, okay. I was Patty Abbott when I was little. Then I married a servant, and then I married a Gazzola. I heard about MPA right at the beginning. There was a demonstration. It used to be a place called Rainbow City Hall. And it was in an old school that had been shut down right across 12th Avenue.
What inspired you to jump in like that?
Well, I actually left Alberta because I was afraid that the ministry would try and take my kids away again, because I was a young mother in the late 60s, early 70s that smoked dope. Okay. And they locked me in a mental hospital for 3 months. You told me I was bipolar, which I haven't had any reoccurrence, so I doubt the diagnosis. I think I was just going against the societal norm. And back then, they didn't have anything to deal with that, so they dealt with it either through the criminal justice or the mental health. And so I had a lot of resentment and anger about that, and they had my kids for, you know, that period of time. When I got my kids back, I jumped on a train and came to BC.
And so then MPA comes along, this opportunity, and...
Exactly. Like, I still went through, like, severe depressions and stuff, but I did not want to go to a mental health professional. And the guy that originally had the idea of people getting together was in a support group, like a group that met weekly and did group therapy and stuff, but people were suiciding in that group. And there was no crisis line back then, and there was nobody on call, and people were dying. So they suggested they exchange phone numbers with each other.
Yes.
And the psychiatrists were totally upset and did not want that to happen. The turning point was when they came into the group therapy and the therapist told them that so-and-so had died and there was two people with that name in the group and everybody's looking around to see who's gone, right?
Wow.
So that's, and, you know, Lenny was all the way to his PhD and he was friends with Bob Hunter, who started one of the starters of Greenpeace, who was a columnist for The Sun, and he did a column on how this group of patients wanted, or people wanted to get together with other like-minded people, and that's how it started.
And what would have been a typical day walking into the drop-in?
I don't know if there was ever a typical day. Well, you open up and people start to drift in and drift out, and on different days there'd be different things happening. We had like a women's group, and we had a dream group, a guy that used to work with Artie Lang in England. We had a like gestalt group that was like politically oriented.
Okay.
And that was free for members. It was run by this guy that when people would talk about, you know, having these symptoms of being oppressed by this, he then they had an actor's workshop, and they had a guy that had directed some films and stuff, and he came, and people don't have the resistance that they would to a therapy workshop, and it was never considered therapy, and the guy was a bona fide actor and director and whatnot, and people had a lot of fun. And then we had outings from the drop-in. We had a woodworking shop. Some people would go in there and do some woodworking. We had arts and crafts area. You know, some people just wanted to play Scrabble or Risk or Crib or...
So you were one of the first ones to start Crisis Lines?
Yeah, and it was all done with volunteers, and we had a little file thing of people with cars that were willing to come out in an emergency if somebody needed to be taken to hospital or if we were concerned about suicide, and we learned how to keep them talking on one line, have somebody else phone and have the call traced and get an ambulance or something there. And, you know, we just learned how to do that by doing it. And, like, I would take my little boy over there when he was, like, 3 years old and put him to sleep on the couch.
I hope you guys enjoyed that interview. We will be playing the rest of it next week. All Access Pass is on your airwaves not once, but twice this week. Catch us tomorrow on CITR 101.9 FM at 7 p.m., where we will be covering the Push Festival and giving our review of the play King Arthur's Knight, opening tonight.
Thank you again to Sean McCann for speaking with us today about the Bell Let's Talk campaign. Sean will be performing in Coquitlam in the Evergreen Cultural Center on March 2nd. And if you wanted an excuse to ever text every single person on your contact list or Snapchat that cute guy in your study group, today is the day to do that. Bell will donate 5 cents to Canadian mental health programs for every text message that is sent over their phone, over their network, and every use of the Bell Let's Talk filter on Snapchat. There are also other usages of social media that they will donate 5 cents for, all of which can be found on their website.
Thank you as well to Megan Davis, Patty Gazzola, and Arthur Giovinazzo. You can check out the Mad City Legacies of MPA Gallery on until February 25th at Gallery Gachet on 9 West Hastings Street.
If you're interested in joining our team or think there is an issue we should bring up on our show, please send us an email at accessibilitycollective@citr.ca. Remember to like us on our All Access Pass Facebook page. If you're on Twitter and Instagram, please follow us at access_CITR.
And as always, if you miss on any of our live shows or want to listen again, you can listen to our podcast shows on CITR.ca by going on the search box and searching All Access Pass. Thank you for listening and tune into our show next week, Wednesday at 4 p.m. Stick around for Arts Report, which is up next. Bye, everyone. Take care.
Marley's birthday celebration bash. Don't worry about a thing and head upstairs at the Grandview Legion Hall on Saturday, February 10th for live performances by Canada Reggae Sensation, Steel from Toronto, Boom Daddy Band, Redemption Sound, DJ Bradley, and DJ George Barrett with Doors at 8:30. Jamaican food and refreshments are going to be on sale. So get your advance tickets for $25 at High Life Music, Zulu Records, Island Vibes, Barber Surrey, or Red Cat Records. This event is lovingly sponsored by Butter King, Co-op Radio, CITR and Discorder, and Wadada Hi-Fi Sound Systems.
Saying, let's get together and feel alright.
You're here till the end.
So you're a member of CITR and Discorder, but are you a true friend?
Get a Friends of CITR and Discorder card for $20 for discounts around downtown at
Little Sisters Book and Art Emporium, Sikora's Classical Records, the Cinematheque, Vinyl Records, and the Fall Tattooing.
I'm Shani from NEPSI. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
From amongst the Adidas of the form. In a moment of weakness, I called the one that I love still. I called, but you couldn't hear me. You were getting on the train. Sounded so like yourself. You sounded so like yourself.